Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Honey on the Book, The Life of Louis M. Rabinowitz, was written by Irv Tunick. It stars Eli Wallach as Mr. Rabinowitz and Theodore Bickel as the narrator-singer.
Editorial, New York Times, April 30th, 1957.
That this country is a land of opportunity for all has been proved innumerable times in the lives of innumerable individuals, but never more vividly than in the case of Louis M. Rabinowitz. But if he received much from this country, he also gave much. He once remarked, "People die, but culture doesn't die." It was to help make sure that culture and freedom do not die that Louis Rabinowitz devoted much of his life over many years.
Eulogies by the Times editorialist are distinctly hard to come by. We will tell the story of how this one came to be. Häufen Pripetschok brennt a fire und in Stubis hay. Und der Rebbe lernt kleine Kinderlach, dem Allerbeis. Today, by some, this song may be considered quaint, a folk legend, sentimental, far off. But not to Louis Rabinowitz. To him, it sang a verity, a truth. By the fireside, where the embers glow, through the wintry day, there the teacher softly with the little ones chants the Aleph Beis. Learn your lessons well, remember precious ones, the letters of the law. Chant ye once again, and yet once again, Kometz Aleph O. There was a time when those who sang this song sang it with such conscious warmth that the melody lit a candle, and the words were tall. It was a paean, an exaltation to learning. It is also an introduction to the life of such people as Louis M. Rabinowitz. To begin with, we will forget the chronology of dates. We will concern ourselves with the far more important aspect of ideas. For this man believed hard, and all of his beliefs were rooted in experience. He believed, for instance, that people die, but culture lives on forever. Louis M. Rabinowitz came to America from Lithuania in 1900 at the age of 14. The America he came upon was vital and turbulent. Humanity flooded the Lower East Side of New York. It was a catch basin of anxiety, poverty, and hope. Main stem was the Bowery, a cobblestone straw that sucked the new vitality of the immigrant into the bloodstream of the city. At the crown of the Bowery was Cooper Union, all instructions free, open to all, irrespective of race, creed, color, or place of residence. This was the great oasis. Classrooms, quiet, and a library.
Now, Louis, you know you can't take that many books out at once.
But I have a job in Jersey now. I won't be able to come back for at least a week.
What do you expect to read 9 books in a week?
It's like having money in the bank. Even if you don't use it, it's there if you want it.
Well...
Oh, please.
Go on, take them before I change my mind.
Louis,
Outside was the reality of the city. Massive, bewildering, sometimes terrifying.
Stop him! Stop him! Stop him! Stop that man!
Out of the way, kid. Get out of the way.
Hey, you, my books.
Here he is. I've got him.
That's the one. That kid. I saw it all.
What? Arrest him, officer.
Take it easy. I'll handle this. Hand it over.
What?
Don't give me the dummy act. Let's have it.
I don't know what...
The what?
The one you stole from me.
I didn't...
Empty your pocket.
Look,
you
I don't...
You dirty little thief.
I don't know what this is all about. I was just walking along and this man bumped into me.
Empty your pocket.
All right, but I didn't do it. Here, I'll show you.
That's it? That's my watch?
You're a thief.
No, I don't know anything about it. That man, that's it. That man who ran into me, he must have slipped it in my pocket.
Oh, sure.
Come along with me.
I didn't do it.
Come on.
I hope they put you away for 100 years.
Hello, son. Come on in. Sit down. You're Louis Rabinowitz.
Yes, sir.
My name is William Travers Jerome. Know who I am?
No, sir.
I'm what they call the district attorney. My job is to protect the public against all kinds of vicious criminals. You don't look so vicious.
Mr. Jerome, believe me, I didn't do it.
The watch was found in your pocket?
I told the officer. The man who bumped into me must have slipped it into my pocket. I don't know anything about it.
Ever been in trouble before?
No.
Do you have a job, Louis?
Yes, sir.
What do you do?
Paper hanger.
In school?
I study.
Where?
I go to Cooper Union Library and borrow books.
These on my desk?
Yes, sir. They're the ones I just took out. Can I have them back?
Well, let's see now. Darwin, Wallace. Pretty heavy going. Do you really read these books, Louis?
Why would I have them if I didn't read them?
Well, we'll see. Let's see if you really read them. Suppose you tell me how Wallace differs from Darwin.
You mean you want me to tell you now?
Yes.
It's a long story.
Make it short.
Well, for instance, Wallace says a man walks erect because his foot was shaped a certain way. Darwin says that his foot was shaped in a certain way because he already walked erect.
Complicated.
No, sir. It's all a matter...
Who's right?
Right?
Yes. If you've read these books, you may have formed an opinion. Who's right, Darwin or Wallace?
Well, you know, Mr. Jerome, I lived in a little town in Lithuania. The nearest big city was Vilna. Twice a week, I had to drive our horse cart to Vilna. And twice a week, my brother drove it. Is it all right if I tell you this story?
Go on.
Well, I went to Vilna by way of a town called Probinsk. Why? Because on the Probinsk road, there was a farmer I knew who let me pick some apples. Now, my brother went to Vilna by way of a village called Kaminsk. Why? Because he knew a girl who lived in Kaminsk. So I went by way of Probinsk, and he went by way of Kaminsk.
What's the point?
Well, the point is, Mr. Jerome, we both got to Vilna. Wallace and Darwin take different roads, but they both get to Vilna.
Louis, you didn't steal that watch.
No, sir, I didn't.
I'm going to let you go.
Thank you.
On one condition.
Yes, sir?
You must promise me you'll never give up your books.
Give up my books? Mr. Jerome, books are my best friends.
And books remained his most faithful friends throughout his life. Some 50 years later, a reporter for the magazine New Yorker visited Louis Rabinowitz in his office. The reporter was frankly baffled.
As I understand it, Mr. Rabinowitz, you never went to Yale.
No.
And yet, if my facts are right, you've been making gifts to Yale to the tune of some $60,000 a year for a number of years. On top of that, you gave them $75,000 to set up this Judaica research project at Yale University, plus books, paintings, manuscripts.
Oh?
Why Yale?
Why not Yale?
I don't get the connection.
Wait, I'll show you something. You know what this is?
No.
It's a set of Dante that Fanny Braun gave to the poet Keats. Some of Keats's sonnets are written in the margin in his own handwriting. Imagine, his own handwriting. Here, you see?
Oh, yes.
I feel like washing my hands before I touch a book like this.
I can understand that.
You're a writer. Of course you can. But I'm a manufacturer of hook and eye tape. Isn't it wonderful that I can appreciate the treasure of this book, too? At 14, I came to America from Lithuania. I never had a day of formal education. I sold remnants in a pushcart on Hester Street. I was a house painter, a paper hanger, a dress trimmer, a machinist.
And all the time, the thing that kept me alive was that I had books. Whenever I walked into a library, I became rich.
Later, it's true, I made money. But you don't own money. The only thing you own in life is whatever you give away. Because what you give away is what you truly possess.
Yes, but now about Yale.
Oh, I'm coming to that. So, one day I found myself temporary trustee of a great deal of money. I felt obligated as a guardian to use it wisely. Then it occurred to me, people die, but culture lives on. So I decided to use this money for the one everlasting thing I know of, culture. So I started the Louis M. Rabinowitz Foundation, and among others, Yale received a number of gifts.
Well, it's a tremendous thing you're doing.
Honestly, I don't consider it
so. I don't deny myself anything. Yet look at all I gain. I have a passion for culture. Look at this book again. When I touch it, I feel I'm in touch with Keats. I don't care if I die tomorrow.
Learn your lessons well. Remember, precious ones, the letters of the law. Chant ye once again, and yet once again, comets aleph all. Louis Rabinowitz's passion for culture was in the great tradition of his people. To open a book was joy. To read a book was life. When he was permitted to borrow his first book from Cooper Union, it was an ecstatic experience, one that must be shared. In those days, of course, he spoke only Yiddish, but we will take the liberty of translation.
It's me, Louis.
Louis, hello.
I've got to show you. Can I come in?
Of course. Wait, catch your breath.
I ran all the way from Cooper Union. Oh. Look what I got. They let me take it from the library. This book.
Let me see it.
My first English book.
The Descent of Man. Charles Darwin. Louis.
It's a wonderful book. Look how thick it is.
But your first English book. Don't you think you should start with something easier?
Easier?
Well, look at all the big words.
Big words, little words. They're all in my Yiddish-English dictionary. That's how I'll learn them. Do you think I want to talk English only in little words?
All right, if that's what you want. Oh,
you'll help me.
Of course.
Look, in the kitchen, maybe you have some honey?
Honey?
Just a drop.
I think we might have some.
Please.
Well, let's look.
Your mother won't mind?
Oh, I'm sure she won't. If we have some, I think it'll be in here.
It's not really important.
Oh, we
but...
do. There isn't much honey left.
All I want is one drop.
I'll get the spoon.
No. Just a little on my finger.
Okay.
So, now on the book. I don't think the library will mind.
What's that for?
Didn't your mother ever do it for you?
Do what?
Put honey on your first book.
No.
My mother did. On the first book, a drop of honey. And then you lick it, like this.
Louis, what for?
So that always, forever, you think of the two things together. Sweetness and learning.
Always, throughout his life, he thought of the two together. Sweetness and learning. When he was able, he surrounded himself with fine books, fine paintings. Not that he isolated himself in a cave of culture, far from it. He was of the world and loved the world, and wanted to share sweetness with the world. So, he went to New Haven, to Yale.
He had lunch with a librarian.
I see that Park Bernay is auctioning off some rare books on American history. Have you seen the catalog?
I have, and I'd give my eye teeth to get some of the things they've got.
Do something for me?
Certainly.
Take the catalog and check the books you'd like to have. Mark down what you think would be fair price for them, then send it to me in New York.
Well, now...
Well, I'm going to the sale. I like going to auctions. It's fun. And maybe I can pick up one or two of the books you need at good prices.
Well, I'd be glad to. But some of the things we need may go as high as $100 or even $200 apiece.
Mark the catalog. Let's see what happens.
What happened was that every book marked was purchased at prices well beyond the figures noted. And when a very grateful librarian called Louis Rabinowitz to express the thanks of the university, he was told,
"The best way to thank me is to let me know whenever something comes up you want or something needs doing. I don't promise I'll be interested, but I would consider it a personal favor if you would let me know."
The calls came, and usually Louis Rabinowitz was very interested indeed. Item: establishment of a professorship in Semitic languages. Item: the Yale Judaica series published for Judaica research at Yale University on the Louis M. Rabinowitz Foundation, a 12-volume monumental translation of the Maimonides Code. Item: presentation to the Yale Library of Caxton's Sayings of the Philosophers, the first dated book printed in England, and others. In 1952, Yale University established the Yale Medal, honoring individuals who have given outstanding service to the university. Among the first recipients was a small, unassuming man in the hook-and-eye business, who had been born in Lithuania with never a day of formal education in his life. 2,000 alumni, members of the faculty, and undergraduates gathered in Woolsey Hall and heard the citation.
"His has been the immigrant's dream, fulfilled through imagination, industry, and integrity. He has believed in Yale and has shown it by strengthening our libraries and galleries and by fostering research in many fields. During the 250 years, Yale has had no benefactor more discerning of its mission as a university."
"Chant ye once again, and yet once again, Comets Aleph." So his love of learning, his adoration of wisdom, was something deep within him, and constantly he sought new avenues to follow along his chosen path. On Upper Broadway in New York City, he found the Jewish Theological Seminary. He walked in, literally, from the street, and met with its president.
"Whatever you want, let me know. I may be interested, I may not, but let me know."
Again, most often, he was interested. Item: establishment of the Louis M. Rabinowitz Research Institute in Rabbinics. Item: publication of Professor Saul Lieberman's monumental work on the Tosefta, the great commentary on Jewish law. Item: the University of Judaism in Los Angeles.
"I know it's hard to get the complete picture when you're just in Los Angeles for a short visit, Louis, but Jewish life in this city leaves much to be desired. Philanthropically, we've done well. Spiritually and culturally, we've hardly made a beginning. We have nothing that even resembles an institute for higher Jewish learning. No focus of cultural existence."
"Well, coming here, I passed through the Imperial Valley. It's marvelous what a touch of water can do to a desert. It makes it spring alive. Torah is water. It fructifies and enriches. You know, I'm on the board of directors of the seminary. We've talked a lot about setting up a University of Judaism here on the West Coast."
"Do you believe it will ever happen?"
"Well, I believe, yes."
"How can we make it happen?"
"Not by talk. By action. Quick action. The board decided to go ahead, and I just decided to give the building."
"Give us the building?"
"Yes, that's the smallest part. You fill it. That's the important part."
He never measured the project by its size, not in cost, not in effort, not in time. If it needed doing, and by being done it would add to the sum of the world's culture, then he would have it done. Item: establishment of the American Jewish History Center. He liked to visit the library of the seminary and spend hours with his good friend, Professor Alexander Marx of blessed memory. One day, he noticed some yellowing, dog-eared books on the stacks.
It's heartbreaking, Professor Marks. Now, just look at the way some of these books are actually falling apart. Especially those printed in Europe 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's the paper. Pulp. New York's climate just eats the pages away. The humidity.
Well, can't something be done?
Yes, certainly something can be done. There's a new technique that's been developed that can preserve the pages, but...
But what?
But it's very expensive. Thousands of books.
It has to be done.
It has to be done. So how shall we do it? Shall we turn away a dozen students?
I still say it has to be done.
How?
I'll do it.
I don't think you realize what's involved. How much this will cost.
You haven't noticed my pockets, Professor Marks?
Your pocket?
I'm a walking filing cabinet. In every pocket, I carry the papers of a specific project I'm interested in. This vest pocket is the American Jewish Historical Society. This one is the New York Public Library. This one is for Dr. Nelson Glick's archaeological expedition in Israel. This one is Hunter College. You know what I've discovered about men's suits?
What?
Every time you put one on, you discover another pocket. Here, this one, this little pocket inside the big one. You see it?
Yes.
That's for saving the books. So do it.
By the fireside where the embers glow through the wintry days, there the teacher softly with the little ones chants the Aleph Beis. He believed deeply in books and believed even deeper in the sanctity of human expression. He had been trained in the school of free ideas. Talk fascinated, educated, crystallized, and entertained. And it sculpted a man, an American. There was a time in his later life when the country he knew and loved was swept with panic. The inalienable right of descent was challenged. This worried Louis Rabinowitz. So he set out to find outstanding educators, not yet afraid. He provided the resources that created Columbia University's historic study on academic freedom. At one meeting, in answer to a question, he explained to Robert McKeever,
"My friends, this is going back 40 years now, my friends then were anarchists, socialists, single taxers. They had more different labels than a row of canned vegetables. Any night, in any flat, on any street on the east side, you would find the intellectuals debating philosophy, politics, books, music, anything. This was my schoolhouse. It was my grade school, high school, and university. Saturday night, particularly. Oh, I remember those Saturday nights. These people I'm talking about, they were aflame with debate. Until 5 o'clock, the arguments would rage. Make no mistake. These people were serious, but at 5 o'clock, all the talk stopped. We all went out. Did we go to the streets to throw up the barricades? Did the revolution begin at 5 o'clock? No. At 5 o'clock, we all went fishing. Listen, I'll tell you what I believe. As many sides as there are to a problem, that's how many sides you should talk about. It clears the air. People let off steam, and here and there they have some good ideas. It doesn't hurt to hear them. If you don't do this, then what happens? You push them underground. You don't stop them from talking. You make martyrs of them. Suddenly, instead of an opinion, they have a cause. I've never gone to college, but that doesn't mean I don't know what a college is for. A college is a distillery. You put in what is read, what is said, what is thought. And out of this mash, if you're patient, comes a few drops of wisdom. That's why academic freedom is important.
The material success of Louis Rabinowitz followed traditional patterns. He had a natural understanding of machines and became a machinist. Then a small businessman manufacturing hook and eye tape. Then a big businessman. But about the age of 50, Louis Rabinowitz departed from the traditional pattern. He began to worry about money, not how to keep it. He went his way with great independence, doing what others would not do, but what badly needed doing. He was never on the sidelines. He participated actively in every one of his widespread interests. He was not only a giver, he was a worker. He was a rich man, but money was the smallest item of his wealth. He could add up columns of wise deeds, total up ledgers of good and important works. He had licked the honey from the book, and the taste forever remained. We began with the New York Times editorialist. Let him say the final words.
No one man can assure the survival of culture, and more particularly of the books, paintings, and other physical objects which transmit culture from one generation to another. But the limits of what one man could do in this case were brilliantly demonstrated by Louis M. Rabinowitz. And it is for this demonstration particularly that his passing is mourned, and that his name will go down in the history of the Friends of the Humanities.
Learn your lessons well, remember precious ones, the letter of the law. Shan't ye once again, and yet once again, comets aleph oh. Shan't ye once again, and yet once again, comets aleph oh.
Copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our eternal light drama today, The Life of Louis M. Rabinowitz, Honey on the Book, was written by Irv Tunick and edited by Dr. Moshe Davis. It starred Eli Wallach as Mr. Rabinowitz, and Theodore Bickel as the narrator, singer. Others in the cast were Ronnie Liss as the young Rabinowitz, Joseph Julian, Roger DeCoven, Patsy Bruder, Dean Lyman Almquist, Joseph Bell, Alice Yerman, Guy Repp, Harvey Hayes, Charles Webster, and Marion Carr. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. This is Mel Brandt. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.